GNU/hello and GNU/welcome to GNU's... Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I went on Monday to see an interview with Richard Stallman for Linux Format Magazine, so...
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did you?
Wow. Linux Format Magazine, you say?
Yeah, not GNU/Linux Format Magazine, but...
The great man himself.
The great man himself, yeah, is in London, travelling around Europe. It was excellent to meet him, because his opinions and his beliefs in free software have carried us all forward over the years. And even though even though a lot of people see his views as like the most extreme incarnation of free software, he's still there to keep us on the right track.
He is. He's the anchor in the concrete.
So yeah, we'll have his interview in an upcoming issue of Linux Format 145, I believe. So,
yes. Yep. That is
cool.
The plan.
So stay GNU tuned. I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm GNU/Graham.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I'm Efrain Hernandez.
Excellent.
Alias GNU Efrain Hernandez Lawrence.
And in this podcast, we're talking about GNOME 3, Nokia's Qt business, Mark Shuttleworth's announcement about the new Ubuntu 12.04 name. We've got our Discoveries of the Week.
Who's going to have to pronounce that one?
I don't know.
Andrew.
Andrew.
Very good at
it's
that
Andrew's turn.
I looked it up.
Yeah. And we've got our open ballot, of course. If you love what we do in this podcast, then of course you will love the aforementioned Linux Format Magazine. You can subscribe to us. You can subscribe to it and make us all rich and happy at tuxradar.com/subscribe.
It doesn't make us rich.
Oh, yeah.
No.
You can believe
definitely
that.
Definitely no.
Right, it's now time for the weirdly messed up discovery of the week section, which really should be news. I think news really is the natural fit for this.
Do you reckon? We changed it around, didn't we? We used to do
just
news
to mix
at the start.
It up. We all used to do different sections as well.
Yeah.
Which is quite good. I mean, the reason why we don't is because we don't have any plan. We're just so badly organised that...
I get confused.
Yeah, we just print out the same things before. Anyway, discovery... I have actually... Oh, no, Andrew's got his arm up. Go for it, Andrew.
I've discovered that Thomas Cook are currently offering £200 off all Egyptian and Tunisian holidays.
Wow!
£200?
£200 off.
Is something going on out there?
Yeah, is there a reason?
I haven't seen the news.
I don't know. Maybe we're just getting a really good exchange rate at the moment.
Yeah.
Or something. Another benefit of keeping that pound.
Are you tempted to go for Easter?
Sadly not. I'm more of a Western Supermare man. But I do have another discovery, which is related to Linux.
Yeah.
Is Western Supermare more dangerous than Egypt?
I don't know. Western Supermare is a lovely town.
How come they don't have any... Sorry to interrupt. How come they don't have any deals to go to Libya?
I don't know. Can I get on with my discovery now?
Yeah. Just
brought
just
to you
wonder.
By Thomas Cook.
Yeah. In other travel agents, and also other Mediterranean countries are available. In Kubuntu, KDE4, when you look in the applications menu, I'm trying to picture it in my mind's eye. I hardly ever use KDE, so it's quite difficult. There's the menu to get things started, what used to be called the K menu, and then that opens up by default in a favorites menu, which doesn't have much in it because I hardly ever use it, and then you go on applications to actually open applications, and the icon for applications is a CD leaning against a box, and it's like they're harking back to the old days of boxed software.
Whoa!
It looks really weird. I was looking, I couldn't find how to, you know, I think I was looking for Abbey Word. I couldn't find it for ages because I was just looking for some other icon or other, and not realizing that this box with a CD leaning against it, as you might have seen in PC World maybe 15 years ago, was actually the icon for the cutting edge software collection.
So how would you represent applications in a small icon form then?
I don't know.
Just KDE use gears and things a lot of the time for this sort
of
stuff.
A semi-Masonic symbol that's kind of got a compass over... Just let me check.
Oh, yeah, the thing that fruit company...
In a circle with, like, a ruler in the middle.
It seems to work. It looks like an A, doesn't it?
So. Very Masonic.
Cool.
Can
I have a go?
Yeah, of course you can.
Yay, thank you. I discovered something about FreeBSD, actually.
There is something about FreeBSD you didn't know before.
Correct, yeah. I saw a blog post from one of the FreeBSD developers who was calling for more participation and involvement in the project. And he said that there was actually only one FreeBSD developer working assigned to working on X.org. You know, it really surprised me that just one guy working, or girl perhaps, working on X.org. And there are four people working on KDE, but I always assumed that there were more people involved. So I really like FreeBSD. It's a great operating system. It's super reliable. So if anybody's looking for something to do, some project to help out there.
Yeah, I wonder if it's becoming more popular, especially with its inclusion in Debian, and whether it's got a lot of forward momentum that, you know, maybe the whole Linux thing becomes less relevant.
Possibly so, yeah. I mean, there's PCBSD.
Yes, which is brilliant.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, perhaps the FreeBSD guys are not too fussed then about X.org and KDE and the like, because they know the PCBSD people.
Yeah, they've got it sorted.
Yeah, they're going to focus on the desktop side of it, so perhaps it'll be a kind of like an old Debian Ubuntu relationship. But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, my discovery is just over the last week, the International Space Station has been visible in the UK in the evening.
I saw it one evening.
Did you?
Thanks to you, yeah. Thanks to when you told me.
It is, and really is incredible. It's so bright. You just, when it goes across the sky, you just think, you know, it's remarkable. Unfortunately, well, initially the Space Shuttle Discovery was there at the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and it looked like there might be a chance that we'd actually see both the Space Shuttle and the ISS in the sky at once. Unfortunately, that didn't work out because UK time, it had already moved out of our region. I actually think I spoke about this a couple of years ago on the podcast, where I saw the Space Shuttle and the ISS over the skies of France. But anyway, the program that I use to predict when the ISS will be visible from the UK is called GPredict. And it's a fantastic little tool that I'd never come across before. It's based on a command line tool called Predict.
Right.
And GPredict is the GTK-based GUI-ized version. It's really nice. You get a nice, that old NASA image of the Earth. And it doesn't just do the ISS. It does any kind of satellite you load data for. And it shows the satellite on whereabouts it is over the Earth, and also shows a kind of a spliny oval for where it should be visible from at that time.
That's cool.
And you can see all this move in real time. It can also provide a list of where it will be in the sky, and also a compass direction of where to look.
If you see the path of two satellites that they're going to collide in a few hours, is there a phone number you can call up to?
There should be. Maybe, yeah. It uses online data because satellite orbits and trajectories changes all the time. So you download... The files are downloaded automatically from places like NASA, so it's always up to date. It's a really good tool if you know the ISS is going to be in the vicinity of your viewing position early in the evening.
Yeah, I guess it's also good as well if you don't want these satellites spying on you. You can cover everything in tin foil when they're crossing over you.
That's a very good idea. Or go and live somewhere where the satellite doesn't quite go over. Yeah, somewhere in the Pacific, probably.
Yeah.
Where,
Funafuti or Tuvalu.
Where that guy from Goldfinger must live. It's my discovery. Oh, there's Scaramanga. It was Scaramanga in Goldfinger, wasn't it? I think it was Scaramanga.
Scaramanga was in the Golden Gun.
That's the Bond I'm thinking of, the Golden Gun. It's cold as done me head in. And my voice, I think.
Is that the real Graham Morrison? Where's the robot voice?
No, I will not.
Come on.
Nobody, I'm sorry.
Liked it. Everybody liked it, apparently.
Effie, you got anything?
Yeah. I got two discoveries this week. The first one is, well, both of them are related to Mexico. The first one is about... Yeah, over a decade ago, I tried to get through satellite some Mexican television, and I did manage to get some service, but it was limited to one channel, and it was just repeat programs.
Mexican national television.
An actual channel. That 2 years ago, I subscribed to an online service from a Mexican television company called Televisa, and you had to install a plugin called Move Media into your browser. Unfortunately, only worked on Windows and on Mac.
Right.
It didn't have a Linux version. So a year ago, I tried to install that plugin using the Windows version of Firefox running on Wine, and it didn't work. It just didn't work at all. this week we tried again. Well, I tried again, and chan-chan, it worked for some reason with them. I don't know, with probably with the newer versions of Ubuntu and so on and so on. I managed to get it to work.
So that's Move Media on Windows, Firefox, on Wine, on Linux.
Exactly.
Wow.
The only problem is that if you also got Flash plugin installed on that Windows version of Firefox, they conflict and Firefox crashes.
Right. Flash does suck enormously.
So. I don't understand why, but it's problematic because some of the streaming controls require Flash. If you have the buttons of, I don't know, play, pause, fast forward, some of those controls are developed in Flash, so you might need them, you might not need them. It depends of the company that's broadcasting and streaming the video. And the reason why I'm saying this is because a part of the Mexican television company, there's about six different American companies using this service, like Fox, ESPN, ABC, they all use this to stream live video. You subscribe to the service, and basically you can watch it online, which I think is a fantastic thing if you're an expat.
That's pretty cool. Although there's no reason to watch like Fox and CBS and stuff when you can watch Mexican TV all day.
TV soap operas, Mexican wrestling, football.
I'm presuming
what else you need?
That program with the bumblebee guy walking around.
It will be there on repeat.
Yeah, so that's the best Mexican TV program I've ever seen.
Respect to the Mexican television. So there you go. So you can run it now on Linux.
Cool.
Using Wine and the Windows Firefox.
Brilliant.
Version, but don't install Flash.
Or just don't install Flash.
Or just disable it
it's
or whatever.
It's rubbish.
Yeah.
It is rubbish.
So there you go. The second discovery of the week is that after a long research, I find out there's not a single Mexican cantina in Bristol or Bath.
What was your research in the market?
Walking every street, like the littlest hobo.
I knocked on every single door. In Bristol specifically. There's nothing.
How many Mexican cantinas do you expect to find Somerset?
Well, it's not Bristol is not Somerset, is it?
No, it's not.
There you go. So
it's
a totally complete different
Bath
place.
Is.
But Bath is, I understand Bath. It's a smaller place.
There are loads of English cantinas.
Yeah, true. I didn't look for that. But if you go to London, then they just loads of them, and they're all very popular. And I find that it should be something in Bristol, specifically for, I don't know, 20 young people like you.
So you're looking for a business partner then, really?
I'm just thinking that it's a really good opportunity, that's all. Yeah. And that there's a gap in the market that should be exploited somehow. Mexican cantinas with free snacks thrown in, with every single bucket of Coronas.
I've just found 10p I can invest.
That
wow.
pays for almost everything.
Got to be careful with that. It's a recession.
That pays for the chillers.
Keep the pound.
Keep the pound.
Okay, so that's awesome. Awesome discoveries. Thanks. And thanks,
you're
thanks
welcome.
For being here in your lunch hour.
Is that sandwich good?
It's finished now.
All right then, let's move on to the news, the big events. GNOME 3, they're going to remove the minimize and maximize buttons from the title bars in GNOME 3. What do you make of this?
I never used the minimize and maximize buttons in the title bar. I double click.
You double click?
I never use the buttons.
But in which window manager are you talking about? Because they do different things double clicking, don't they?
The default GNOME, whatever it is.
I don't know if that minimises it in GNOME.
It does now that I've changed the settings
to
make it minimise it.
Ah. You're clever.
What they're saying is, there's one one GNOME guy, Alan Day, said, the reason they're going is there's nothing to minimise to, like a dock or window list, and it's potentially confusing since users will not know where their windows have gone. This is to do with GNOME Shell, of course. GNOME Shell is throwing the whole window management paradigm in the air.
So what happens when you do minimize in GNOME Shell?
I don't think you can anymore.
So the feature is disabled, it's not like...
Well, I don't know, because I haven't really used GNOME Shell much.
I do a lot of that.
I do a lot of minimizing.
Same here.
I use everything. I use virtual desktops and minimizing, just, you know.
Yeah.
I can understand, as Andrew's saying, reassigning it to a certain click on the toolbar, on the window bar border. But even then, I'd rather there be some explicit button to press. Why are they freeing up the space?
I don't know. The idea of having a small panel at the bottom, which you can use to sort and organize your application scene, makes a lot of sense to me. Windows 95 popularized it, but there was a panel like that in RISC OS before.
Yeah.
I know I have to mention RISC OS every podcast. So that'll be interesting to see how that works. I wonder if GNOME 3 is going to go so far with GNOME Shell.
It seems like, you know, it's taken... Well, how long has GNOME 2 been around? 9 years? 2002?
A million years.
And all of that time, the one thing we've said is great about GNOME is the fact that it doesn't change, that they've slowly refined what it was a brilliant idea. And then it's like they're prepared to make all these changes almost at the last minute and without any clear, specific reason for making it happen.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, I'm sure people can point out a lot of problems we have with the ways we use computer desktops today, but perhaps a more gradual evolutionary change is better.
I think so. I think, yeah, they should learn from the mistakes the KDE team made and try not to do them. I mean, update the SDK, brilliant. You know, create a new framework in Unity to make people so that next generation GNOME 3 apps can work in a different, better way. But kind of forcing all these changes on people at once is a challenge.
Well, they do know what they're doing, or hang on, let me rephrase that. They are thinking about what they're doing.
Yeah.
If you look at the GNOME 3 design FAQ, there's one of the points they make is that the top left area of the screen is the most important bit that people look to start for any menu. That's where you want to begin, because in Western languages we read from left to right and from the top down to the bottom of the page. So that's naturally where people look when they start something. And presumably, if they were doing it for Arabic or something, then the start menu or the application's menu item would be in the top right. There's a logic to everything that they're thinking about. I mean, it may seem obtuse to us, but you know, I trust them to know what they're doing. And also, if people don't like it, then you know, we've still got GNOME 2. It will inevitably be forked.
I wonder if it will be forked. I wonder if there'll be enough backlash against all these design decisions that GNOME 2 will continue on a different path.
You know, Linux Mint carries on just being GNOME 2.x,
yeah,
but maybe with 3 APIs. You know, that's probably possible.
Could well be. Moving on, last podcast we talked about the situation with Ubuntu and Banshee, where Ubuntu Canonical,
we're all kind of confused.
Yeah, Canonical wanted to use Banshee in their next release of Ubuntu, and there was confusion over
the affiliate code to purchase songs from Amazon's MP3 store.
Yeah. So just to recap, Canonical. Oh, I can't remember.
Well, the thing is, we weren't absolutely certain last time. But what it appeared to be was that Canonical proposed to the Banshee developers that they could, one, either we keep the Amazon store as the default option in Banshee and the affiliate code changes so that Canonical gets 75% of the money back from Amazon, 75% of whatever they get through every sale, or it's turned off and the GNOME Foundation, which is the default place where the money goes, remains as the affiliate code.
Right.
So the Banshee developers said, well, rather than Canonical getting the lion's share of what is only a small part of money, we'd rather keep it all going to the GNOME Foundation and don't enable it.
Right. There was a huge amount of discussion about this online, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And Mark Shulworth posted a blog entry a few days ago saying that mistakes were made in this. A very humble kind of...
Yeah, I did read the blog post. He said something about the individual who actually made the agreement at some conference was overstepping the mark.
Yeah, he said... to quote, money is particularly contentious in a community that mixes volunteer and paid effort. We should have anticipated and been extra careful to have the difficult conversations that were inevitable up front and in public at UDS, that's been the developer summit.
Yes, yeah.
When we were talking about the possibility of Banshee being the default media player in Ubuntu. I looking around on comments and forums on the net, I read so much on /.osnews, and like, a lot of people are very suspicious of Canonical because they see Canonical having a clear goal of making money out of
Linux. Yeah. Quite a few people have made the point that when Ubuntu started, it was very much a community-based distribution, and that's what Mark Shuttleworth wanted to be. He wanted this benevolent dictator. Mm. And in the early Ubuntu releases, that's how it felt. Now, as it seems, they probably have to make more sense of their business plan. They're looking for more ways to monetize it, firstly with Ubuntu One, and now with doing things like this. I think... We discussed, you know, how we felt about it. I haven't got Mark Shuttleworth's blog, but there were some pretty creepy sentences in there, as I remember. I can't remember. Have you got any more of it there?
No, just that.
No, I can't remember. I'd have to look.
But yeah, there is going to be this push for Canonical to make more money out of Ubuntu, isn't there? Because when it started back in 2004, Shuttleworth put a load of money into a foundation or
£10 million
$10 million, he was rolling in cash, but at some point he's going to want some return on that. He's going to want it to be a successful business. He can't just keep throwing money at it forever.
I imagine the first part of his plan was accomplished. He wanted Ubuntu to become a dominant Linux distribution.
Yeah.
Part of that was his big community sell. It's got to that point now, and he's probably bored of the idea of a community distribution and actually wants to think, now what next? Let's try and copy Apple or something like that, you know, and see if we can make some money out of this thing that we've got now.
I wonder if we can see more of these problems cropping up then.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a company trying to make money. Mm. That's what they're there for, and that's what they do. I think one thing that perhaps shows another sign of Ubuntu's possibly changing philosophy is the jump to Unity and away from GNOME. One of the key points of Ubuntu in the early days, and still today I think, is that it fits on a standard CD. You get 700 megabytes, so you know it's suitable for people without great access to broadband. Presumably, if you don't have great access to broadband, then you might not have great access to 3D accelerated hardware. But they're abandoning GNOME and going towards Unity, which requires more advanced and therefore more expensive computers to run it on.
Yeah,
it seems like a shift away from the original goal of a cheap, accessible computer in every African village.
Yeah, the meaning of the word glitz. Ubuntu. Yeah, that philosophy of sharing, and yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there is supposed to be this 2D backup for Unity that none of us have seen yet.
But let's pretend that instead of the £3,000, the $3,000 that this affiliate code is and the GNOME Foundation, let's pretend it's £10 million. You know, how would we feel about it then? The GNOME Foundation gets £10 million for everybody downloading music through Banshee, and Canonical just comes along and changes the affiliate code and gets the money instead. That actually reveals a problem in the way free software is funded and the way things like affiliate codes and the way Banshee developers go about doing services like this. And I think that's probably the issue underneath this. People just aren't happy that they've come in and basically put their own name to something that they've not had very much involvement in, which is a gut reaction, even though they're legally completely free to do it.
Yeah, it's what's in the spirit of free software, isn't it? Not just in the
It makes no difference to them as well, but anyway.
But in more Mark Shuttleworth news, he's announced the name for Ubuntu 12.04.
Time moves quick.
Hang on. Well, what's it? This is the... What, 8? So
hang on.
No, it must be 11.10.
Are we at Natty Narwhal now?
Natty Narwhal
is 11.04.
Is 11.04. So it must be 11.10.
C-D-E-F-G. Oh, hasn't he already announced 11.10? It's an O, isn't it? So let's work it out. So yeah, it must be 11.10.
I wrote 12.04 in my notes.
So did I. That was silly.
So did you. This is scary. Maybe Mark Shuttleworth did as well.
It must be 11.10.
We'll find out. But it's the... Oneiric. Oneiric Ocelot. Ocelot? Ocelot?
I think it's an ocelot.
What does it mean?
It means dreamy wild cat.
Oniric. It's from the Greek. It's pertaining to or relating to dreams.
Cool. So, and has anybody ever seen an ocelot in real life?
They have a very fine fur. It would keep us nice and warm on a day like today.
That's cool. Yeah. Maybe
Quest,
that.
They had one in Quest for the Holy Grail.
Right.
Yeah.
That's cool. So what's really interesting here is that they're using cat names, like a certain other operating system provider.
Was it Ocelot's Noses or Ocelot's Spleen in Holy Grail?
I can't remember.
No, it was Life of Brian.
What was it?
Yeah, when they're in the amphitheatre. Badgers, tongues.
Yes, that's it, you're right.
Whatever, I can't remember.
It just had a Monty Python flag in my head, that's all. I tag memories.
Ray, yeah. Ray in the
metadata.
Yeah. Or somebody injected the memories. And never
it happens.
Well, I think really, in terms of the alliterative animal names, Ubuntu really lost the plot when they chose not to use Monkey Monkey.
Monkey Monkey would have made Ubuntu defeat Apple.
That would have swept away all previous desktop paradigms and leveraged a great big coolness silo.
Yeah. I guess most end users don't care about these code names and they will just think of Ubuntu 11.10. But it just
it's a missed opportunity, though, isn't it? I mean, it's not very clear. It's not very snappy. I find it difficult to remember.
Yeah.
Lion is much easier to remember.
Oh, yeah. That operating system. And then the final news story is following on from what we've been talking about in the last few podcasts to do with Nokia's Microsoft announcement. And, of course, Nokia owns Qt. Well, Nokia is now selling off the licensing and services business of Qt to a company called Digia.
Yeah.
Presumably Digia. So they're not selling Qt the technology. They're not slashing their developers, as I understand it, but just the office type of contract stuff and support people, they're all moving, they're going to sell them to Digia. Is that right?
I don't know. I did scan through the press releases when this news was announced. I remember reading that that Digia hopes to employ the developers as well from Nokia.
Well, that'd be a full sell, wouldn't it?
I don't understand why there's a differentiation between the commercial licenses, of which, remarkably, there are only 3,500, I think they said.
Oh.
So 3,500 paying whatever, €10,000 for each license isn't a massive business for anyone.
No, I mean, that's like people make virtual bots.
Yeah.
And
I think Nokia paid 150, 160 million something when they bought it. So they paid a lot of money for Qt.
And I'm kind of scared about what Digia actually is. They could be a great company. I'm not going to knock them. But I went to their website and on the first page, trying to work out what they do, it says customer experience management and flexible business solutions.
Yeah. Sweet.
I think they use Qt.
But what do they do?
I don't know. But Qt is just used in lots of those anonymous back room, for service applications internally. It's a quick way of knocking up an application. So I don't know. They must have the money.
They must.
They've jumped in and Nokia doesn't really give a damn who gets Qt.
But then, is this really bad for Qt? Again, Digia could do amazing stuff with Qt. We don't know yet. But when Nokia was there, Nokia had products. Nokia had shelf presence. It was a brand people could associate with. Whereas if Qt just disappears into these back office, backroom things in a company that makes flexible business solutions.
I think all of this is bad for Qt. I think it's all bad for Qt and bad for KDE. Right. The uncertainty, it's the same as a company going into Chapter 11. This, of course, has plenty of potential for things to work out right. I don't think Nokia was good for Qt. I think the emphasis on mobile, where they initially dumped Qtopia and then they've moved more towards Qt Quick and gestures and obsessed with trying to squeeze it onto their MeeGo platform, I think was the wrong way to go for 100% of their development efforts. I think they should have carried on. There haven't been any massive decent feature additions to Qt since Nokia took over.
Right.
Things like Qt Creator were already on the cards before Nokia bought it. The great thing about Nokia is they have plenty of money and they invested heavily in QT, the QT Developers Conference in Europe and in the US, was massively popular and always growing.
That's probably not going to happen and now. No. You won't get your trip to Munich every
That's
year.
That's true, so. Yeah. And so,
well, I'll invite you over when I live there.
So in terms of investment in QT, I can't see that following, and I can't see it being taken as seriously as it was, Tommy. So you know, it's bad.
Let us know what you think, listeners. What you think of Digia.
Okay, it's time for my favourite, very favourite part of the podcast, and I've got a few.
Yeah, every part, it's, including the end.
It's, it's You Dare Us. That means You Dare Us. this particular one, over the last 2 weeks, I've spent a lot of effort trying to get this one right. Yeah,
that's cool.
I gave it about 10 times more thought than I gave the last one. But we spent about 5 minutes thinking about it this morning.
That's a lot. So what was it? We had to come up with a new mascot Linux.
Supposedly a really simple idea that we could do because we've all been insanely busy over the last 2 weeks.
Making Linux.
Which is why we're
magazine.
Recording this at lunchtime.
Yeah.
And DIY.
And yeah, and he's been doing lots of DIY, knocking down walls and rebuilding walls.
And I talked to that Stallman dude, so.
Yes. Yeah. So the idea was to design a new Linux mascot, something to replace Tux, the lovable, cute, childlike avatar of Linus Torvalds.
Childish? Or childlike?
Childlike. It's a playful little Tux. They kick little balls around, play with balls of string. Okay, so yes, I didn't get very far, but I did give it some thought. As mine is a thought thing, I'll start with it.
It's a thought that counts.
I think okay, the childish Tux, immediately recognisable, and I don't think we should perhaps throw away the penguin emblem. I like penguins, and it's something that everybody recognises represents Linux. I thought Sabayon uses a penguin's footprint.
Right.
You know, it's on the desktop background. Yes.
I always thought that was a dinosaur.
Well, yes, and that was going to be my negative. I think it's a penguin footprint. Huh. I think that's a really nice idea if it didn't look like such a terrifying beast, a terrifying dinosaur. If it was. And then Mandriva, I think, or certainly other people have used a more cuddly version of the footprint, you know, a more rounded version, which looks nice too. I also like penguin in penguin books. I think they managed to get. A seriousness, obviously, because they've been around for 100 years, that the gravitas in penguin books and penguin, I think, is still something we should keep. So I also thought, whatever logo it is, it has to be show the collaborative nature of Linux. There are plenty of hands, but something like that. And I also thought, my last thought was that it would be good if it kept the black, yellow, and white colour scheme from an Emperor Penguin's, whatever they call the tuft of the neck bit, you know, where it changes colour.
Yeah.
They were my thoughts. I didn't actually draw anything out of it, but that was what I was thinking would be good.
We can all picture in our heads. I can picture a black and white and yellow penguin, sitting down. Great.
If you have the footprint, isn't that confusing because of the GNOME desktop logo?
Yeah, GNOME. Yeah. The big smelly foot that GNOME used to have in the corner.
Yeah, yeah, it is, but a penguin's footprint is quite different to that of a gnome's.
True.
Right.
Yeah, it looks like a dinosaur thing, you know, three-hoofed Beelzebub thing.
I did think long and hard about this as well, and I tried to put together all the different ideas and aspects of what makes free software, and I came up with a little cartoon devil holding a pitchfork. But it turns out the FreeBSD already uses that for some reason, so that was quite annoying. The idea that I had, the idea I was going to tell people that I had, in a very canny type of way, was a seagull. A seagull flying with a big kind of L at the side of it, almost wrapped around it.
But like Open Office?
Well, maybe. The reason I came up with this is because I am pretty sure of it, unless my brain's has completely seg-faltered, that was the Linux logo before Tux the Penguin came around.
Right.
Back when I was using Linux in like 98, I remember coming across an image on the internet of a logo for Linux, and it was a seagull. And I'm sure it said at the time, this was you know, a really early, like 1992 or 3 attempt at a mascot for Linux before the Penguin came out. And I looked and looked for it on Google Images this morning, and I can't find it at all. So I might just be completely mental. But if anybody, if any listener out there can remember this or has seen this seagull and the L, please put a link.
Okay, there. Cool.
Because that'd be great. Seagulls rule.
They're all right. They're a little bit annoying when they're mating. And they do crap all over the architecture.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
They keep you awake at night as well.
Yeah, if you live in bed.
While I was saying all that, Andrew's been drawing some, like, Ferris wheel or something next to me. So maybe he's going to a theme park, or maybe he's got a logo.
Yes, Cogs. It's a logo. It's Cogs.
Oh, okay.
I really like KDE's logo. I think that's probably my favourite thing about KDE, apart from the bouncy ball. But I was inspired by Apple, funnily enough. Their Apple with the bite taken out of it is, you know, according to some people, inspired by the method that Alan Turing chose to commit suicide. Maybe by eating a bit of apple that he'd poisoned, he'd injected cyanide into.
Yeah, which isn't cyanide already in apple pips?
So it is,
it's kind
of
like some sort of recursive suicide method or something.
How very Unix-y. But I thought of, you know, it's great that they're giving a shout out to that huge towering man of genius. So I was thinking about other towering men of genius, and I got to Leibniz and Charles Babbage and Blaise Pascal and other dudes who worked on the forerunners of computers, the mechanical analytical engines, the calculating devices. There's a model of one of Leibniz's machines, and the cogs look so delicate, and it's all sort of fantastically steampunky, but not in that fake, contrived, made-up way that steampunk is. Because it was actually old. It's an old thing that looks old because it's from hundreds of years ago, rather than that, you know, some design students put a bit of fake rust on it. and I would like the logo to be something based on that. So I've got three gears of different sizes within a square, because I think squares are very easy when you're laying stuff out. We know this from other distro logos, that ones that are irregular shapes are a pain to deal with. And the gears represent the modularity of Linux and other Unix type operating systems. And then I reckon just the word Linux underneath is good.
No GNU.
Oh, I knew I'd left something off. Hang on, let me just put it on now.
That's messed up the shape of it now.
GNU/Linux. Now it's a really stupid shape. Oh, damn it. It's all rubbish now.
Oh, well. The dream was there anyway.
Yeah, thanks.
That's really good. Like, replacing the mascot with a logo, with an icon, rather than a mascot.
An icon. Because Windows is an icon. It's pretty good. Yeah. Apple's is pretty good. And Apple's has seen various incarnations. Yeah. They've had the coloury, the rainbow one, and the brushed metal, and they can update it to match, you know, whatever the look and feel of OS X is.
That's really professional.
Thanks.
Congratulations.
I try and, you know, with my little biro sketches on the back of the podcast notes. I actually know that's someone's CV. I think professionalism is pretty much my middle name.
Impressive.
Go on then, Effie. As the resident artist here, you can beat us all.
Well, I was trying to replace the penguin with another animal, and I thought about lynx just because of the name.
Deodorant.
Yeah, pretty much. Just
because all Linux geeks could do with lynx. Exactly.
You said it. I didn't say. And then I was thinking about free software, and the only thing I could link it with was Mexican wrestling.
That's usually what most people think of.
Because, and I tell you why, because the sport's called in Spanish, it's called Lucha Libre. Now, Libre is free. That is why I thought about it. And then I thought, the mascot could be replaced with a Mexican wrestler with a mask being the icon. And it's about, I don't know, the mascot being a superhero, the hero of the free software.
But I once read somewhere, like on the back of a matchbox, that wrestling is fake.
What?
Would that not be representing? Would that not be a problem?
What do you think?
What could that suggest about?
Not just a slapping about. They,
really?
They're fighting. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It must have been wrong then.
Right. So those Saturday mornings spent watching Big Daddy.
Giant stuff.
Easy.
So the Mexican wrestler's mask, and the wrestler could be called Lean Axe. Something like that.
It smashes a distro over your head.
Something. I didn't think too much about this, to be honest.
Well, we need another one then, and I just came up with a great idea. We've all come up with new logos for Linux. Why don't we all come up with a slogan for Linux?
Yeah. Okay.
Like 5 words, 10 words, something that gets across why we love this operating system, why we love free software, why it's great.
It's a great idea.
It's one we can actually do as
really
well.
Really good idea, Mike.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Wow.
It's one we can actually think about when the next podcast starts.
Yeah. While I'm reading out the notes.
Actually, we were thinking of something to replace the number one source for Linux in the Linux format logo.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Maybe this could be an aspect of the podcast which we somehow in a convoluted and indirect way actually get paid for.
Yeah. Cool. I've always wanted to get paid for this.
Even if it's changing source source to SAUC.
I think the number one source for Telunix.
And with that, we come to the, well, I would say halfway point of this podcast, but it's kind of like two-thirds point anyway, because we've got coming up now In the Dock, and then the results of the open ballot. So, now, In the Dock. It was me in the last episode talking about there being too many distros.
You did a brilliant job of that.
Thanks, Graham.
Convince me.
Because I'm just turned to my left naturally anyway, I think it should be Andrew's turn. So, have you got an opinion about anything, Andrew?
I do. I have a half-baked stream of waffle.
Brilliant. Can you deliver this waffle nicely toasted in 1 minute?
I make no promises, but I'll give it a go.
All right. You've got 1 minute to convince people about something, starting now.
Right. I installed the Ubuntu the other day, and the first time I ran Rhythmbox, it popped up a dialogue saying, you don't have the codecs needed to play MP3s, would you like them? So I thought, yeah, that's really good. This is really good, awesome usability. It's much better than the way that Linux Mint does when it asks you at install time, because when I'm installing, I'm not really thinking, I'm not really aware of the issues surrounding codecs and licensing and stuff like that. It only really hits home when I stop and want to actually listen to some songs. However, I look back at an old version of Ubuntu, and it didn't happen then. It seems that it's something that they've only put in place now that they've got the Ubuntu One, Ubuntu Music Store. So it's something that they've had all along the ability to do this, to put this little dialogue in here and make it easy for people, but have chosen not to, but only doing it now because it will make them more money from the Ubuntu Music Store. And other distros, fair enough, you might not make money, but just do it anyway. Do it anyway to make Linux easier to use.
Beep. Wow. That was pure.
Do it anyway. If you can make it better, make it better. It's not about, we know it's not about the money.
And just shaking his arms
Debian
around.
Debian developers don't sit in their parents' basements thinking, how can I monetize this? How can I achieve the best shareholder revenue return?
It's okay, Andrew.
That's not what it's for.
I know.
If that's what you want to do, then fine, do it.
We all know. It's okay. We understand.
I could fix it, but I'm not going to get paid to, so
we're on your side. It's okay. Look, sunny outside.
Can we go to the pub now?
It's lunchtime.
It is lunchtime. That's not a reason to calm down. That's a reason for more anger.
And you've lost your pen.
I've lost my pen.
And we're all going to die.
And that's now time. It's now time for open ballots.
You're going to retire when you're 85.
But at least I'll have £140 a week.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, open ballot. Open balloted away.
Open ballot. As Mike never tires of telling us, he interviewed Richard Stallman yesterday.
And the
day before, whatever. It's been ages since he's boasted about it that I've forgotten. So that inspired us to think, does Linux does GNU slash Linux
slash free software
does it need a strong character at the top, keeping us on the right path? Now, what do you think, Mike? You spoke to Richard Stallman.
I've absorbed his
just
energies
mere hours ago.
Yeah.
how do you still have his spittle on your beard.
On my beard.
Yeah. How do you feel about the idea of a strong Jobsian style figurehead for the free software movement?
I think it's important to have people who represent different positions on a subject so that we can use ration and reason to work things out for ourselves. So I won't go to Richard Stallman's extent of demanding free software over everything. I don't have a big political goal in this, but I think it's good to have somebody who talks about free software being reliable, like the open source guys would do, and then there's somebody who talks about it being a good ethical thing, like Richard Stallman would. So people on different sides of the spectrum having different opinions. So I think it is important to have these people. Perhaps not one, but I think it's important. Then we can all use our own reason and use our own experiences to work out what is the best position.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds pretty much like what Eric Messer says. Because beliefs tend to fall along a spectrum. Interesting that he's used exactly the same word. Maybe he was copying off you.
He's a spectrum user.
You need people. You need people on the extremes to show you where the edges of the spectrum are. So you have RMS to show what FLOSS should stand for, and then you pick where you fall along the spectrum.
That guy is basically me.
Well, awesome. Oh, hang on. So does that mean that you're not the two people who said that Mike should be the leader?
No.
That was really funny.
They are my real fans.
Meris Polia says definitely, and it should be Mike.
I think so too. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think if Mike was our figurehead, I'd think Linux would be awesome. Absolutely awesome.
But that is important. If you have a figurehead for this, being a democracy, can you vote every, I don't know, 6 years for a new leader?
Well, somebody mentioned Parliament, so I'm sure Andrew will read out.
Yes, Gwilym Cowper.
You say Cowper.
Well, yeah, anyway, Gwilym says, maybe there could be like a FOSS Parliament where we have all sorts of parties, like ones held by Stallman, who promote everything GPL, and some who want Linux to be used commercially, and there could be voting and stuff.
I like that idea. I think that there should be a figurehead, simply because it makes Linux so much easier to market. If you want Linux to grow, it's so much easier when you've got somebody to go and talk to, or someone to print a photo of. You know, it's what that's what they do with Windows, what they do with OS X, and we don't want a dictator, so the only other option is that we all vote for someone, which I think is a brilliant idea.
Gwilym uses the word figureheaditize.
Figureheaditize.
Which I think is massively awesome. Les Pounder, of whom we'll be hearing more shortly, says, a leader galvanizes their followers, but with the diverse nature of Linux and FOSS, who can be the leader that leads us all? Apple have Steve Jobs, Microsoft have still Steve Ballmer. Again, Jobs and Ballmer mentioned a few times. Aegis says, I'm not sure if this is an appropriate analogy, but the WikiLeaks dilemma shows that it's not always best to have a figurehead to an organization.
Totally right, yeah.
A figurehead like Julian Assange inherits a lot of recognition, but also is given the burden of liability.
That's a good point. I agree. Maybe that's how Linux should differentiate itself from OS X and Windows. You know, we don't have a leader.
Well, we've often talked about that there doesn't seem to be a leader of KDE as such. You can think of the prime point for the kernel is Linus Torvalds, and you can think of that with some other projects as well. But with KDE, you don't
you're
know.
Right.
Now, perhaps that is part of the problem why the early 4.x releases were difficult. But I don't
certainly know. When you don't have a Jobsian character saying, no, that's not good enough, go away, do it again, no, that's not good enough. In fact, that erodes goodwill if people are doing it for free. It's the problem that we always find.
Yeah.
Well, one more comment on this subject. Ray Woods says, ask people who Bill Gates is or Steve Jobs, and they will no doubt be able to tell you. Now ask what free software is, and you will get blank looks back. Mm. We need a well-known champion. Effie, do you reckon we need some sort of figurehead?
Yeah, I think we need a figurehead, but I also think that you have the right to decide who that figurehead is. You, because just for the simple reason that you might not be agreeing with what this particular person says. That is so, and you want to, I don't know, to contribute to the community in some shape or form. So, but you want your opinions to be heard. So, yeah, that's it.
Uh-huh. I've got to give a brief shout out now to Hugh, who says yes, no, software freedom means milk for school kids again.
Grr. It means too many breakfast cereals.
Thanks, Hugh. Thanks for that.
That's not bad, is it?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. A separate but related point. Should that... I mean, it was more or less implied by the question, but should Richard Stallman be the figurehead?
No.
Jack no. the Hat says, yes, it does, but need a figurehead there, but not like RMS, though we do need people like him in the movement. He shouldn't be the figurehead.
Yeah, well, I said free software in the question because I wanted to make that clear. I think Richard Stallman wouldn't want to be any a figurehead of what we call Linux anyway. Yeah. Maybe of GNU/Linux, but when I spoke to him the other day, he says he doesn't do much. He doesn't do any coding now anyway. I don't think he sees himself as being a technical leader in any way making decisions. He's an advocate of freedom. So
yeah.
But I'm not saying that it has to be a leader. It has to be someone that represents what Linux is about, isn't it? And that's what I mean. You have to decide as a user of Linux or as a developer of any points involved with Linux who that person is.
So it could be anybody. Should I set up a campaign to get myself set
up? Yeah, I think so. I think you should do it.
You've got two votes already.
Can we have someone representing Linux? And that's someone... speaks with a robot voice. I think it would be much funnier.
I'm not doing it again. Some of those comments made me cry.
Oh,
poor you're all right, you're a big boy, you can.
Well, I know. I'm not really. I have this brave facade, but I'm underneath it's pathetic. But when Graham eats a banana, an amazing transformation occurs.
Flame Fodder says, why is everybody obsessed with RMS? Well, it's because Mike went to visit me the day. It depends on what you want our figurehead to achieve. If we're talking about protecting the purity of the Floss ideals, then he's your man. But if we want to encourage the use of Linux to a wider audience as a viable desktop alternative to Windows and OS X, then his puritanical ravings would set the wider cause back 10 years. Principles, yes please, but a figurehead to evangelize Linux to the wider world? Give me Mark Shuttleworth every time. This message from our sponsors. overall, of the people that do want a figurehead, RMS seems quite popular. Rui Sebra says, it's people like RMS who shine like a beacon towards the direction of free software. Without their shining white light, only the red volcanic light of Mordor remains.
Best comment ever.
Dazfuller says, of course we do. RMS keeps us all on the right path. Even if most of us do not go the whole distance to the RMS ideal, the fact that it is there gives us something to aim for, a benchmark for openness. And that is, you know, that's pretty much the pro-RMS argument.
That's cool. That's cool. Thanks.
If we're thinking of RMS for publicity, it's just not going to work, is it? And the BBC goes to RMS. And what do you think about, you know, Linux versus OS X?
Well,
the question should not be about Linux versus what you call Linux.
But that is a classic politician's tactic, isn't it? The question's not really whether we've increased funding to the NHS. It's really... Blah, 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 blah,
it's about
blah,
freedom.
Blah, blah. Yeah, it's freedom of the patient, freedom to choose.
It's freedom zero.
Well, let me answer that directly.
I think what people really want to hear about is... he's already got the patter. And he does actually... In a strange way, he reminds me a bit of the awesome Tony Benn, who we went to see in Bristol all those years ago. Tony Benn says that there are two different kinds of politicians. There are weather vanes and signposts. And a weather vane changes direction whichever way the wind is blowing. We can probably all think of a few of those. The signposts point the same way, regardless of what the weather is. and they might be right or they might be wrong, but at least we know what they're saying. And I think you can lay that charge at Richard Stallman's door, because he, in all the years of being mocked on the internet of the frankly stupid free software songs and all the other stuff, he's stuck to his guns consistently, and in the core of his argument he is absolutely right.
But what happens if we're just motes of dust in the wind? Then we need the weather vane to show the way. The signpost just points in an arbitrary direction.
If we're being blown along by the wind, we don't need anything to show us the way.
Well, it's handy to see which direction the wind's going relative to your current movement.
In the next episode, we'll be discussing Plato.
Habit.
And with such philosophical meanderings, we come to the end of Open Ballot. And now here's a special message for all of you in the rain-lashed northwest of England who are interested in Debian, Ubuntu and other such things.
U-Cubed is a great new event in Manchester, England. It brings together the Debian and Ubuntu communities to share ideas and knowledge.
We'll be hosting talks and workshops on various topics such as Ubuntu Debian bug reporting,
package management,
and many more topics.
Our next event will be on the 2nd of April at MadLab in Manchester, and more details can be found at our website at ucubed.info.
Try it yourself. You'll see.
But don't take it from us.
Don't take it from me.
Thanks to the YouTube guys. Right, that's it for the end of this podcast.
Oh, wait.
What?
Look, by popular request, it is one more thing.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
And we started off this podcast talking about GNU / everything. And in his quest to get recognition for GNU, Richard Stallman has come up with various ways to do this. And there was another alternative he had to GNU / Linux a few years ago that he suggested people use in order to give GNU credit. Can anyone remember what it was?
Heard?
No. GNU-nix.
GNU-nix is close. Effie?
GNU-nix.
Lignux. Lignux. Was what he suggested. Apparently this came out in a build of Emacs ages ago. It if it identified your system as Linux in autoconf, it would say Lignux. And then there was something in the GNU manifesto about us trying to call it Lignux as well.
No.
I can't really see that. It's a phenomenally ugly word and difficult to pronounce.
Yeah, hi Mum. I know Windows is really bad and running awfully on your laptop, but do you mind trying Lignux?
Magia Lignux with LibreOffice and GIMP.
Oh yes, Graham, I'll give that a go.
Thanks, Graham's mum. And with that, we come to the real end of this podcast. We'll see you all and hear you all and everything in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.